listening to a special episode of the Trailer Pod Boys podcast, the podcast dedicated entirely to Trailer Park Boys. In this special episode, we are proud to present a very special guest. So now, here are the hosts of Trailer Pod Boys, Matt, David, and Clint, with their special guest, Bernard Robichaud.
Well, we're excited to welcome a special guest on this episode of the podcast. Trailer Park Boys fans will know him as Cyrus, one of the main nemesis of the boys throughout the run of the series. We're talking to Bernard Robichaud. Bernard, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show.
My pleasure, man. Anytime.
First, let me ask, am I pronouncing that last name right? Because I've been researching it all week and practicing to make sure I had it right.
Should have just called me, man. Would have made it a lot easier to go through the research. Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah.
Great, great.
It's funny. I've been called worse.
By Ricky, mostly.
No, we're good, man. We're on a first name basis now.
All right, perfect. Good. That makes me feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. Just leave the Robichaud part out of it. We're good. That way, any Bernard out there will just assume, hey, maybe they're talking about me.
Oh, actually, yeah. If we do interview any more Bernards, we'll just, you know, use this clip.
Yeah, no. It must be the only one out there.
Well, the only one I want to talk to, that's for sure.
Okay, man.
We've got a ton to ask you. I'm going to start off first. While setting up this interview, we had trying to set the schedule. You had mentioned you had some shows booked, and I've been checking into that. And I guess I want to start with that. What you're up to, like right now? What's going on with your live show? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a satirical approach to the character I played on the show. So basically a stupid drug dealer, guy who thinks he has all the answers, but limited intelligence, limited education. Didn't really want to, for me, it's a little difficult not to look like Cyrus because, of course, I played the role. So, even if I showed up with the sunglasses and a Johnny shirt, I think somebody would say, my God, it's Cyrus in a Johnny shirt. So, you know, it wouldn't really matter what the hell I wore. So, what I tried to do was, because I didn't want to be like the rest of the boys, and some of them are actually promoting themselves out there, I left it up to the venue that wanted to, hire me for special events or appearances. How they want to promote me is up to themselves. It's got nothing to do with me, but as long as they're my agent and booking agents have gotten me out there as Bernard Robichaud, and people say, you know, sometimes say, well, who's that? And, you know, also known as Cyrus from the Trailer Park Boys, that's usually a dead ringer. I was like, oh my God, yeah, no, sure, we'll hire him. And, or we'd like to have him. And, I mean, some people here in Canada obviously know who I am, so it doesn't, you know, that's not an issue. But, others, you know, some people just don't know the show. People that, you know, have bars and sometimes just don't have any idea. They just kind of book people to fill the gaps in their when they're trying to bring in entertainment for their clients, so or customers. So it really was more to promote my name and to get me out there as opposed to the character. Which is already popular enough, you know.
Right.
I don't have to really do anything to make the character popular. I mean, if that was the case, it wouldn't have lasted any more than his first episode. And after I dissed my father, I'm sure he would have had something to say about that, and I just would have never made it back on the set.
Well, I have to say, you were mentioning that you were well-known in Canada. Dave and I went to the Trailer Park Boys show here in San Francisco, and it was amazing how many people were. There were a couple of people that were actually dressed up as the Cyrus character, and it was just amazing how many people knew the Cyrus character, knew that much about Trailer Park Boys, but also, you know, were all about the Cyrus character. It was crazy.
Is that right? That's interesting because, you know, I know that my booking agent would love to get me into the U.S., and I think primarily because I'm from the U.S. originally, I think that, you know, we just didn't know what kind of fan base the character had. I mean, I realized that they show an awful lot of reruns, their Cyrus episodes, because they were always had high ratings because, well, people always wanted to tune in to see what the Cyrus or the bad guy was doing. But, and I think that camaraderie and the that within the show, what Ricky and I had and the three boys had while we were working together, you know, you can see it kind of works. You know, it wasn't really hard to do it. You know what I mean? It just kind of, we just sat in a room sometimes and said, "Okay, you start. No, you start. Okay, well, start. Okay." You know. So it was kind of like that. You know, when we first did it for like the first four seasons, really, we just kind of ran it without really having much of a script base. I mean, the story was there, but we changed it a lot. And even after we, you know, started trying to stick more to the script from season five onward, we still would go in there as long as we knew what we had to do between A and B or A and Z. I mean, we just kind of ran with it. And I think that was the beauty of the show, was it's happening right now, kind of documentary style. I know it changed a little bit more after the second or third season. It got, you know, closer to scripted feeling, I think, for a lot of people, but it really wasn't. I mean, yeah, we had a storyline, but before that, when we didn't really use much of the storyline, what would end up happening? Like in season two, I actually did four episodes, but because Mike Clattenburg shot so much with the digital camera and just shot and shot and shot and shot and shot, he just lost track of where the hell he was going.
Wow.
He ended up having to cut like three shows basically out of it because he had too much stuff and didn't know which way to go with any of it. And it was just easier for him, you know what I mean, to cut it all out and put Cyrus in that one episode with Ricky when he's going back to school, get his grade 10, I think. I get kicked out or something.
Oh, right, great.
I think that's the second, yeah, I think that's season two, yeah. But there was a whole series of stuff there where Cyrus actually shows up at the dance party with Lucy in his Corvette with J-Rock in that season.
Yep.
Well, I think there's a dance party in there at J-Rock's trailer in season two.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually Cyrus was in that initially with Lucy. He takes Lucy to the party, starts a big fight with the rap dancers, and now that's gone.
That's amazing.
He does a whole air guitar kind of thing there, you know, dishes the rap music and starts playing air guitar. Some April Wine song it was too. So
that's great.
Totally. So there was a lot of really great stuff that got lost in season two that I think would have been as funny probably as season five, which I probably was the best season, I thought, out of all of them.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, not because the character was in it, just because I think that it just had a lot more going on. There was a different energy level in season five as opposed to the other seasons. I think that was true basically with the character anyway. It brought a different energy level to the series, and it just kind of went from there to like, bam, you know, that sort of thing when you were watching it. I mean, it's kind of evident when you watch the second special, even Say Goodnight to the Bad Guys. You know, it kind of just kind of moves along. And then about the last 20 minutes when Cyrus comes to the dance, it's kind of like it just moves so much quicker from then on. It's really kind of more, it's really exciting. It kind of makes the special, in my opinion. Not to my horn, but from an actor's point of view, or, you know, from sitting back and looking at it, to me, that's my impression, the impression I get. And I think others have said the same thing.
You bring up Say Goodnight to the Bad Guys. And so I noticed that Cyrus was in the first episode and then also, you know, through the show. And then he came up as a character in Say Goodnight to the Bad Guys. Was that an intentional sort of full circle thing, or was that just a kind of a coincidence where they wanted Cyrus in?
For the second special, you mean, or the second movie?
for the second special, where you know they were kind of wrapping up the show with the second special.
Yeah, well, the second special, I mean, you know, we did season five, and of course, you know, season five, you know, we really wanted to keep it to some kind of structure where it made sense. I mean, you can't really do a documentary thing, and then the guy gets nailed with a, you know, 1,000 kilos of hash or whatever the hell I had, and the Uzis and the submachine guns and everything else that me and the Flappy Bird brothers were nailed with at the end, and expect that I'm going to be showing up in season six and seven. You know, you'd think he's going to get at least a couple of years out of that one somehow, you know. So I think it just made sense to hold off a couple of years and before they bring the character back in that respect. But you know, unfortunately, you know, the second special was really supposed to be a kind of a preliminary expose, I guess, of what was going to happen in the second movie, which never really.
No, they didn't really
that way. No, they kind of messed that one up, and I don't know why, to be honest with you. But I'm not the guys that make those kind of decisions. However, I think if they had stayed on that kind of premise, they could have gotten everybody in there too, and it would have been a pretty funny movie. But
you mentioned you and Rob Wells having having a lot of fun together, and that you hit it off really well. And I mean, from my point of view, watching the show, it looked like you and Rob really worked well together. Are there any like bloopers or fun anecdotes that you can share about any of this stuff?
You know, there really, geez, sure. There's all kinds of. The only blooper that I really can think of that really made me laugh was, you know, the funniest thing I've ever seen on that show was in season five when. Me and Tyrion Dennis chase Bubbles down the street when the go-kart, and the boys just left. The boys, Julian, Corey, and Trevor just leave with the hash.
Right.
And then Rob follows them down the street because he doesn't know what they're up to. He thinks he's getting screwed over. Bubbles is going to follow him, and then Cyrus and Tyrion and Dennis come out of the house running, and they see Bubbles, and I shoot at him, and that's the Hubble Bubble telescope line and the little fruit cart, right?
Right.
Yeah, so then and he kind of turns the corner, and then we cut, and we go back to the set, and so he comes screaming down the street in the studio or the set that we had. He comes screaming down there, and we're all standing at the end, you know, before where the scene's going to end, and he's supposed to come to a screeching halt and say, boys, go his way, or whatever the hell, right? So he comes screeching down the freaking road, and we're all standing at the end of it, and it's all being filmed right there, and he slams on the brakes and goes to fishtail it. Well, in slow mo, it's kind of like it happens in slow motion. The cart starts to go sideways as he's fishtailing it, but at the same time he's fishtailing, the cable on the brakes and that little go-kart snap.
Oh, no.
Okay, so it started to slow down, but it just as it's slowing down, it's speeding up again, and it goes zipping right into a lilac bush. With him in it. And he had no seatbelt on it, so he ended up his body stuck in there with the helmet stuck into this lilac bush. And like his ass sticking out of the air, like with his cart underneath him. His head first into this bush. He pulls himself out of the bush and jumps out of the bush basically and goes, boys, boys. Like nothing happened. Like, boys, boys. Sorry, I was on his way. Well, I thought I was going to piss myself right there, man. I think everybody is just smoked. Fucking died, man. It was pretty funny, man. You can kind of picture that whole car just slow-mo. It's just like a cartoon, almost, the way it seemed like it happened, because everybody's expecting the car to, like, stop, you know? And all of a sudden, just zing, and then it just gets into the bush. It was like, what the... Yeah, it was pretty funny, man. I'll never forget that one.
So, it sounds like you guys... had a great time working on the set. How does this compare with other stuff that you've done? Looks like there was a lot of good chemistry, a lot of fun going on, a lot of improv. Is this stuff that you normally do, or was this a really special project?
No, that's a pretty special thing. I've been at the business for 27 years. I think it's rare that you get an opportunity to work with somebody that allows you to showcase your talents. I mean, a lot of times what's written is what's got to be said, you know, depending on the writer and who wrote it, depending on the storyline, also really depends on the director and how much freedom he wants to give his directors or his actors, rather, and some are a little bit more stricter than others. I mean, some want you to play the role, but you have to you can't really ad-lib that much. I think it's pretty rare, too, that, a lot of times, in most cases, I think the director really, he ultimately picks his cast, and just because he picked the cast and because he sees them for who they are or whatever the case might be, that doesn't necessarily mean that the cast works well together. And I think that's a rare thing. Like you have a show like ours, or let's say a show like Seinfeld, for instance, where the cast just kind of, for some reason, is just kind of, it just kind of melds together. Everybody's in sync. For whatever reason, I think of Friends is kind of like that too. Everybody's kind of a friend, even on Friends, where they work together in order to make sure they were all getting paid well. Nobody tried to outdo anybody else. And I'm not saying that happened on our show, but I mean, it was that tight. And all I'm saying is that the camaraderie or the chemistry within the show and within the people that are working together on it, I think that's pretty rare.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty special. I haven't, I did American Sunset with Corey Haim before he passed away.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's a movie now. It's been on a plane on TV here. It did make some of the theaters here in Canada before it went to TV. I think they're just looking at it now in order to see whether or not it'll get a theatrical release in the U.S. But I think that will depend on possible DVD sales and that sort of thing, and what kind of ratings it gets on TV up here before they do that. So, I mean, I don't know any of that kind of any of that stuff or politics behind that. So, but I did do that, and there was a similar thing that happened with that between me and Corey and Frank Molina, who plays Arturo in the movie, and we had. And Mike Masucci is from, he's out of New York, and he directed the film. And he was kind of like the same kind of guy as Clattenburg. He was kind of like an actor's director, He understood the actor and really kind of let them do what they needed to do to get from A to B. And that kind of freedom is pretty rare, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see it happen more often, but, I'm sure everybody's, in every production, there's certain guidelines and everything else that has to be dealt with. And so I'm not sure whether or not the director has that kind of freedom in every production either. A producer's got to have their say and da-da-da-da-da. There's a lot of politics involved in any production. So, who gets to say what and what's actually done. I'm glad I'm not involved in any of that process, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So that reminds me, how did you get involved with the Trailer Park Boys?
Well, I knew Mike and Barry Dunn since about 77.
Okay, so a long time. Okay.
Wow.
77, 78? No, sorry, 87, 88.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Still a long time. Yeah. Still a long time. I was living in California in 1990. I went out there to pursue the acting thing. Never really got anywhere. Very hard to get you know, 250 agents out there, you know, I mean, 34 million people.
Yeah.
Oh, it should be no problem. I came back and to Canada for a few months just to get some more money together. And Barry had called me up and asked me if they wanted to do a documentary on a Canadian actor who had American citizenship, who they felt had the look or the thing that was going to make it in Hollywood. They went across Canada, came down to me and five other people, I think, across Canada. They chose me anyway. They called it Bernie Going to Hollywood, and it was basically a documentary on an actor, you know. And they took me out to California, and we went to stop in Toronto first because I had lived there for a while in the, from about 84 to 87, and did my first professional TV gig there. And anyway, we stopped in Toronto. People knew who I was there. They talked to them for a bit. Stayed there a couple of days, drove out to California. I met some, you know, some who's who. Met Billy Crystal, Robin Williams' manager. Showed them a demo reel, said, yeah, I know you got a great look, blah, blah, blah. give us a day, and we'll see what we can do. And so call me tomorrow. Okay, great. You know, we're interviewing me outside the place, and we had another audition with another agency after that. I think I could have got hooked up with George Goldie in the end, a favorite artist. And but anyway, I called them the next day. And they said, well, we can't get you into the top three agencies. Got a great look, just bought a $600,000 home. Fortunately, Bernie can't help me pay for that, so good luck.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, just like that. Okay, well, thanks. You know, you don't want to take a chance on that one now.
With that whole Hollywood experience behind you, how does it compare to the Canadian entertainment scene? I mean, what's the biggest difference you see?
Well, the money is huge.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's not really the same thing at all. You know, once you're making money in the U.S. or you make a name for yourself, you wouldn't have to worry about too much. I mean, once there's recognition, they really stick behind you here. Doesn't, you know, from one province to the next. I mean, you know, it's funny. In the Maritimes and Alberta, Calgary, Edmonton, that area, out west, BC, they all kind of really know me.
Mm-hmm.
So my agent, I have an agent in Calgary that kind of is trying to, is representing me globally.
Oh, wow.
And,
great.
Right now, anyway, we'll see what happens. Interestingly, I had an agent in Toronto, but in Toronto, they don't really give a shit who you are, because Toronto's kind of mentality is like, this is Toronto. I don't really know. Yeah, we heard about the show.
Jeez.
Just heard about it. Okay. Yeah. It's funny because there's 79 other countries out there that have heard about it too. Well, we just wondered where your province sat in the rung spot.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Inside its country of origin has only heard about it, yet it's progressively getting bigger in other countries as every day goes by. That's an interesting statement.
Yeah. No, exactly. So, you know, anyway, I wasn't getting any kind of, Toronto, they want you to live there. As strange as that may sound, because, you know, I can self-tape for just about anything else in Canada. And I have a production company here that puts me on tape and, you know, edits it and sends it out to my agent, who sends it off to whoever. And, you know, a lot of times they just narrow it down to they're either really interested or they're, you know, specifically interested or they're not. And we don't bother with any of that because, you know, the money that my agent goes after, of course, they either want to pay that or they don't. So, and in Canadian film and TV, that's paying scale and a half sometimes, or double scale, they're not interested in that because the budgets aren't big enough in a lot of their, when they're spending that kind of money, they tend to spend it on the actors they bring in from the U.S., which is, basically how they sell a lot of their movies up here. They bring in a Canadian actor who's now living in the U.S. and has done well, or they bring in a U.S. actor who's not doing anything at the moment, blah, blah, blah. And that's how it seems to be sold up here. So
that brings up an interesting question for me is Trailer Park Boys, they really didn't highlight anybody from the U.S. Other than maybe Sebastian Bach in the late seasons and that kind of stuff. So
actually, I believe he's Canadian.
Is he?
Yeah. As a side note. Yeah.
Well, excellent. So, so was that a unique thing in Canadian television that you've worked in where, there was no real American influence going on here at all?
They didn't want to have anybody from outside of the Atlantic provinces to do Trailer Park Boys. In fact, my role initially was Michael Ironside. They were Alliance Atlantis or Showcase were looking at Michael Ironside to play the role of Cyrus. And
wow.
that's how I got involved. Barry Dunn called me up on a Friday night and said, "Ken, Mike wants to see you on Saturday morning. There's no guarantees, but we think we got a bad guy here that we think you can handle the part that we want you to play." And so I drove into Halifax from where it's a couple hour drive. So I drove in on Saturday morning and Mike had the camera out, chucked shit at me for 45 minutes. I chucked shit back at him. And on Monday they called me up and said I had the role, and
so you beat out Michael Ironside for the part.
Yeah, I guess so, because apparently Barry said, "You know what they said?" I said, "No," and he goes, and he said, "Where the fuck did you find that guy?"
That is awesome. I mean, that is just totally awesome. Beating out Michael Ironside for the part is just you should.
Yeah,
be
that was pretty cool.
That was nice
to hear, for there's no doubt. It's just when you do stuff like that and then they ask you to do and then you get some person that wants to audition for a part that's got 19 lines to it, and you're thinking 19 lines, okay, that should take about all of half a day, right? If that, and you're thinking 19 lines, I mean, how do you want me to say those? And you go to audition and then they say, "Oh, you're a little stiff. You were a little stiff there." Well, yeah, but I mean, you let me read it once. You didn't like the way I read it. And you said, "Thanks very much." And then that was it. I mean, you didn't say, "Hey man, okay, can you try it this way?" And then you get somebody, there are people that get it in their heads that how they're saying it is the way it should be said. And if you don't say it exactly how he thought he said it when it came out of his mouth and how you heard it, then if they don't coincide, then maybe, one word could have been off or slightly. But I mean, to be honest, let's be, 19 words, man. I mean, or 19 lines. Come on. I mean, I could do that 100 different ways. Just tell me how you want it done. And then, and if that's the case, but a lot of times I find they got somebody's face or some picture of how a guy should look when they're doing it, and and if that's the case, why bother putting the person through that? To me, 19 lines isn't really a judgment of what an actor can do. I mean, if you're developing a character for something, that's fine. But in 19 lines, you're limited to maybe one or two scenes with a character. So he's not significant. He's just there for a moment in time to kind of give you an idea of what's happened at this particular spot in somebody else's life, in order to aid the picture, in order to move it forward. So it's not a critical, element. He's not a critical principle in the movie. In many cases, he's somebody that, in my opinion, they could hire Joe Banana to go up there and say, "Okay, say yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Perfect, man. Cut, roll, see the print."
Speaking of lines, I have a favor to ask of you. Can you say, "Fuck off, the Trailer Park Boys got work to do"?
Fuck off, the Trailer Park Boys got work to do?
That's it. Thank you.
No problem, man. It's probably the most famous line Cyrus ever had. Safety always off is always big. Yeah. People ask me to say that.
When you started the show,
how about we fuck on too? Fuck on, and how about why don't we fuck down?
I always had a question about how about we fuck on. Since you brought that up, you prefaced, you know, how much of the script and show was improv. Is that one you came up with, or did you guys have that hammered out before you shot it?
Why don't we fuck on?
Yeah,
you know, I think so because I think that's in Robin Tuzik. I think Ricky just says to me, why don't you fuck off, Cyrus, and how about we fuck on, or something stupid like that. And I think it's, you know, a lot of times it's just as stupid as that, you know.
That's brilliant. That's know, like that's one of the most cool.
It's the same thing as you fuck off, no, you fuck off, no, you fuck off, no, you fuck off. And then, you know, Bubbles comes in and says, wait a minute, wait. How about if we all just fuck off together? You know, like, there's nothing scripted in there about that. It's just that, you know, for some reason, me, Ricky, and Julian were stuck on, no, you fuck off, you fuck off, you fuck off. And Bubbles says, you know, says that line. So that was kind of classic in itself, too. I think all the best stuff really happened when it was kind of like that. We weren't expecting it to happen, you know? Like, fuck off, I got work to do, really just came to my head. I don't even know how the hell I, you know, it happened. It just, you know, it just seemed right at the time. Yeah. First whole episode, direct from the get-go with, you know, go back to the bowling alley there, you know, where, I don't know if it was Heavy Metal Dick I called him, or no, it was Freddie Flintstone, I think, at one point. I think in the very first episode, you know, when you go back to the bowling alley you came from, and, you know, apparently you don't know who I am. So, like, who gives a fuck? I mean, but whatever, you know. And then the little interview there, which is, you know, Mike did for everybody on that first episode. You know, he wanted to interview everybody to give everybody a bit of a background thing. I think the biggest issue that I ran across for me was that, you know, nobody really believed that Cyrus wouldn't have blown Julian's head off in the first episode. And that's, you know, it made it difficult. The character was appeared to be stronger than Julian. And I think that was a bit of an issue on the development of my character. I think they had to keep it within a certain kind of, you know, there were the three boys, and there was the Cyrus character, and the Cyrus character was pretty energized, and I think that was, you know, I mean, realistically, I often thought that they could have ran that show for about 20 years, like Coronation Street, if they had done any kind of serious character development, because there were a lot of characters that really weren't developed as much as the three boys, and could have probably been developed a little bit more. And you would have known more about their backgrounds, and I think all that stuff would have been very interesting, certainly for fans of any one particular character.
That's interesting because I thought that particular scene gave Cyrus's character a lot of depth. You know, where Cyrus had this really blustering attitude, but yet when push came to shove, there was something there that wasn't going to happen. And to me, that really gave the Cyrus a lot of depth.
Yeah, well, you know, it really, I think it depends on who's looking at it. Like, I mean, I always liked the character. I always liked the fact that he kind of had some sort of, you know, as badass as he was, he had a conscience.
He had limits. Yeah, really had limits.
Yeah, he had a conscience. And I think that's, you know, I thought that was evident. You know, I mean, that's kind of how I wanted the character to be. I mean, that's kind of, I think it's kind of evident when he calls his dad a fucking prick for giving him the gun in the first place. You know, that whole first line, you know, my dad gave me this when I was in grade 7, fucking prick. Told me he was proud of me once, you know, that sort of thing. If you're listening to those lines, it's kind of they're heartfelt lines, you know.
Mm-hmm, so exactly. No,
you realize that he's got there's something going on behind the guy, regardless of of how he is with the three boys. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I, you know.
Yeah, I thought that interview was a really good wrap-up of how Cyrus's character was going to proceed. And, yeah, I mean, it was really good.
I do have, as an actor, I have one kind of off-the-wall question I thought of when I was doing the research on this I'd like to ask you.
Yeah, sure.
With the I guess I was just kind of going through, you know, summer movies and movies that are coming up, and I see a lot of retro projects, a lot of things being remade from the 80s, you know, a lot of classic characters. Is there a classic character, TV, movie or otherwise, that if the opportunity presented itself that you'd like to play, that you'd like to kind of relaunch the story of that character?
Wow, that's a good question. You go back to something easier?
Sure.
Okay. No, just kidding.
Oh, okay.
Question. As somebody I would like to play. Boy, that's tough. I watch a lot of movies, man. There's lots of great characters out there that I would have liked to have had a shot at. Would be great to play another Dirty Harry movie or remakes of the Dirty Harry movie.
Ooh, that would be...
That would be pretty freaking cool. I think good. I got the same kind of like a Dirty Harry kind of look would work for me.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I did a lot of boxing in my day. It'd be great to be able to do like another Raging Bull.
Oh, that's another great answer.
Yeah, that would have been a great movie to be part of. Even if I wasn't the boxer, I mean, there's some great parts in that movie. I could have been a contender. gee, what else? I mean, sheesh. I'll tell you, I see myself in a lot of those movies. You know, you tend to watch that sort of, or I tend to watch movies where I, you know, feel like, you know, I have an affinity or that I could have possibly played the role. But, I mean, I always really liked Eastwood. I always really liked, I always liked De Niro, but I don't know who doesn't. I wouldn't mind doing and On the Waterfront with that Brando played, you know, as the biker.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, that'd
be a pretty cool movie to play. That part certainly would be a cool part to play.
Very cool.
You know, those kind of stick out in my head. That's for sure.
Those are great answers. Yeah, that's I'd love the I think you're onto something with Dirty Harry. You might want to give that to your drop that line in your agents here.
Oh, yeah, no, she's just going to go find a producer. Just
small details.
What do you think about this guy? And, yeah, it's so tough out there these days. You know, everybody wants to be an actor. They think that when they see stuff on TV and film that it's just automatic. You know, they have no idea, you know, the time that's involved and how many other people out there want to be part of that whole thing, you know, thinking that it's glamorous. They have no idea, like, the 12-hour days that you go through and sometimes longer, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning with very little sleep and going at it, and they have no kind of idea, like, the, you know, there's such a physiological kind of... because it's hard on the mind and the body, because you're not only performing stuff that's physical, but you've got to be in and out of character all day long. I mean, you can't stay in character for 12 hours. So you're in and out, in and out, and in and out, and in and out. So you're 1 minute you're the character, and the next minute the director's talking to you, and you have to kind of think about what he wants the character to be like. So you know, you're changing continuously in and out of that character, and that is mentally draining. I mean, you know, it's kind of like you go and you go to work for, I don't know, 8-10 hours on a night shift or something, or you know, you come home and you can't sleep for 3 hours because you're all wound up.
Sure.
You know, you know, people think because you're standing around, you know, as an actor, a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of hurry up and wait, but that time that you're on there doing the physicality and trying to get that right and having the lines come out the way that you want them, you know, it's not an easy job. You know, taking those lines off the page and making them your own and making them your own, like, right this minute now, man, because we're on a budget here and we've got, like, you know, you don't get 20 takes. I mean, if you're doing three takes, you're doing good. I mean, three, four takes. I'd start to worry when you start getting above the three, four takes, you know, because now you're just eating up a lot of production time.
Yeah, it really, I mean, a lot of people don't really have that appreciation for what actors are going through. But
no, I don't think they do. They just see with the end result. I mean, you know, and you have no idea yourself. That's why I don't watch myself on TV and film. Very, you know, I don't, because you're your own worst critic. You think that you nailed it on the last take, and you know they use the first take and they cut it with the bit of the second take and part of the third take. Especially now with digital cameras, I mean, they shove my head on Bubbles' body, for God's sake, if they wanted to.
And, oh God, and, I don't think anyone wants to do that. I hope not.
Neither do I. But, and use Ricky's voice for all, you know, or Mr. Leahy's voice, and, you know, in the whole setup. So it's what they can do now is totally different than the way they used to. When you know, even now, I mean, you know, yeah, they dolly, but they're using digital camera equipment now too. So regardless of whether or not they're using a dolly instead of just kind of freelancing it, moving wherever the hell they want to with the camera, which is great that they can do that nowadays, but it's totally different than they were shooting 16mm, and you know, you're eating up, you know, when you were eating up that kind of money film by taking too many takes, that wouldn't be good. I remember guys that did that kind of work, and I never saw them for a long time afterwards. Okay, well, that got around the back room there pretty quick.
We really, really appreciate you coming on the show, Bernard. It's been an absolute pleasure. You've got such great insight into the Canadian television scene, as well as down here in Hollywood and stuff. It has just been a wonderful time. Thank you very, very much.
Anytime, man. When you next time you have a podcast, you want to pick it up where we left off, you just let me know. You know how to get a hold of me.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. And we'll make sure
awesome.
We get you a copy of this or the link to it once we get it edited and up. And I want to thank you as well. You gave us some great information, some great stories about the show we've never heard, and I know our listeners are going to be really excited to hear it.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to be there for you guys, man. I appreciate your time, and it was a lot of fun. And like I said, anytime is good for me. I wouldn't be anybody without the fans out there, to be honest with you. I remember where I came from, and I think sometimes in film and television, you get to a certain point of your career, and you feel like you know, all those people behind you are just bugging the shit out of you, but I never really felt that way. To me, like I said, I'd be just another struggling actor, I'm sure, if I didn't have the fans that really appreciated the character and helped me get a little bit further along in my career.
That's great. That's great.
Excellent.
I know the fans will appreciate to hear that.
Yeah, okay, great.
All right, well, yeah, I guess that wraps this up. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you again.
No problem, man.
Thanks, Brad.
Hey, enjoy, and hope you get to watch a little bit left, whatever left in the football game.
All right, great.
All right, you take care, man.
All right, guys.
Hey, thanks again.
No problem, man.
This has been a special presentation of the Trailer Pod Boys podcast. Visit Bernard Robichaud's official website at www.bernardrobichaud.com and his official Facebook page at facebook.com/Bernard Robichaud. To hear full episodes of this podcast, hear past episodes, and subscribe to the series, please visit www.trailerpodboys.neozaz.com. Thanks for listening.